Yeah. So for today's Eat It or Beat It, where do you want to start?
All right, so it's not the most appetizing thing I've ever seen.
So I think I think it's marshmallow, and it's got a coconut coating around the chocolate.
It's called Idaho's Original Idaho Spud.
Yeah.
The candy bar that makes Idaho famous. Try a little harder, Idaho. Yeah,
it's
coconut.
The only reason why Idaho is famous.
Yeah.
Is
well,
it popular?
She's not a looker.
But she may not be the most beautiful girl at the dance. However,
but
I
she might taste terrific.
She might taste terrific. I love
cocoa,
chocolate and coconut together.
Cocoa flavored marshmallow center, dark chocolate coating, and shredded coconut.
That sounds right.
With a unique texture and taste.
Wow.
Oh, unique.
Selling it.
Yeah. Just try to tear a chunk off, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, let me see. I'm going to hold this over my head.
It does look like a turd.
Yeah, no, it does.
It has
right?
been left out in the sun.
Yep.
I was trying not to be
Absolutely.
Crudité about
yeah,
it.
No,
but
you're correct. It does. Here we go. I'm going to hold this over my head like Rafiki in The Lion King.
Do I
yeah.
need to bow to this?
And I'm going
to
rub it on your forehead.
Yeah.
Here's a little rub for you, Lee.
Thank you.
Just stick your forehead. There we
what
go.
What is the filling?
It's dark. It's cocoa-flavored marshmallow.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, whatever you want to do. Here you go.
It's actually not repulsive.
It's not repulsive, but...
That's what they have on the candy bar wrapper I see here.
It's not.
Repulsive.
Terrific.
Yes.
He has not been Mewtwo'd.
The filling is vaguely Three Musketeers-esque.
It is.
But
not for me.
I don't want the coconut on the outside.
I actually love the coconut on the outside. I'm like 80% of the way to liking this.
This is not a meat candy bar.
I am not a huge marshmallow fan in candy bars, but this is probably the closest to a like smooth, not gross texture.
Yeah, I think if it was like a thicker chocolate coating and the same filling, I would love it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would probably taste a lot more like a Three Musketeers.
Yeah, that's true.
And it would be good.
I did not expect this, but this might be an eat it for me.
Wow.
Send me all your spuds, okay? Give them to me. Spud me.
Chris is a spud boy.
Go spud yourself.
I would rather have a potato covered in chocolate.
The podcast where three friends sit down with a troubled movie, a themed cocktail, talk about what worked, what didn't, and how they would fix it. I am Chris. I don't have secrets, but I am an ally. Ravel.
I am Lee. I love champagne. Delahanty.
And I am Brendan Ross Park Maltrischler.
And if you couldn't tell by those beautiful, wonderful nicknames, we have just watched 2020's Happiest Season.
It's our Christmas spectacular.
Woo!
Holiday spectacular? I forget what I say. Probably holiday.
Ho, ho, ho.
Ho, ho, ho.
Gay,
ho,
gay,
ho,
gay.
Homo?
Oh, that was even better.
Yes.
We did the gay Christmas film, Happiest Season, with, Kristen Stewart, Mackenzie Davis, Mary Steenburgen, Mary Holland, Victor Garber, Alison Brie, Aubrey Plaza. Who am I missing?
I mean, that's the big thing.
Awesome. Directed by Clea DuVall, co-written by Clea DuVall and Mary
Holland. Yes.
A lot of names. A lot of people we like in this movie.
A lot of people,
2020.
Yes.
Yeah. A lot of people that are talented.
It was a COVID-o movie, yes? It came out during COVID.
Yes. We finished filming as COVID was starting.
Yeah.
So, yes. Memory of a kinder, gentler time.
Yeah. Little did we know where things would go in our world.
Exactly.
But before we get into all of that, what did we drink?
The drink that we made for Happiest Season is called a spiced... alcohol. It's 1 cup milk, 1 ounce bourbon, 1 ounce crushed dark chocolate, excuse me, 1/4 ounce vanilla extract, 1/2 ounce of unsalted butter, 3 green cardamom pods, cinnamon, and nutmeg. In a small saucepan, heat the milk, crushed cardamom pods, and a dash of cinnamon and nutmeg over medium-low heat for 10 minutes. In another small saucepan, heat butter and chocolate over medium-low heat and stir until melted. Add hot milk mixture to the butter and chocolate mixture while whisking. Remove from the heat and remove the cardamom pods. Mix in the bourbon and vanilla extract and serve. What did we think of a spiced... alcohol.
The spiced alcohol I thought was really delicious.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously we had some notes. I think we all agree it could have been a scooch sweeter.
It was...
You also said more cardamom forward,
yeah.
Yes.
A little more cardamom perhaps wouldn't have gone awry. But I agree. Lee was the one to bring it up which is unusual because Lee almost never thinks things should be sweeter.
You know it's crazy if I say this.
Well, right. And it's funny. That's how I sort of talked to myself. Like, I got 88% dark chocolate for this. And I was like, ooh, is that too high? And I'm like, I don't know. We don't want it to be too sweet.
Yeah.
But I do think if we had maybe brought it down like 10%, it would have been...
Yeah, I think you would have probably noticed a little bit. Or I had also said afterwards, like, we had syrup. We could have thrown in a little dash of maple syrup. Chris, you and I had basically had mentioned, you know, like, oh, what if we had marshmallows? Maybe we should have brought marshmallows.
Yeah.
Like, you had a marshmallow that melted in there a little bit.
Right. Yep.
That would probably help too. So, like,
I have marshmallows, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Unless I threw them out. I don't know how long the shelf life of a marshmallow.
Yeah, we found out, we found some in our cabinet yesterday that had, like, hardened and ossified into
a fossil?
Yes. A fossmallow, I believe.
They gotta last. They're made of nothing.
They do last a while, yes. It just, I mean, they're not bad. It's just the texture is not what you want it to be.
They're probably from last year.
And probably still fine.
Because they're probably from, like, I bought them last winter probably for hot chocolate.
I think that's probably why we bought our bag of marshmallows that we threw away too. But the spices mostly came through very well. It was a nice variant on a hot chocolate in that respect, because I feel like usually you just do sort of maybe like a cinnamon or nutmeg, but the cardamom added a little bit of a pop.
Mm-hmm.
So it was fun in that respect, I think.
Yeah.
It was an earthier flavor, which I
liked it a lot.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too.
You have notes. This is why constructive criticism is so important.
That's right.
It's true.
You know, there's always room for improvement, even on things that are good.
That's right. It's just taking things from like 9.5 to a 10.
Yes, exactly.
Exactly.
And speaking of taking something from 9.5 to a 10, do we have a summary ready?
Get ready.
For this film?
Get ready. Buckle up.
It's going to be like the Ulysses of Wikipedia summaries.
Yeah, basically.
Gravity's Rainbow.
It's quite long. Okay. Happy season. Abby Holland and Harper Caldwell are a couple who have been dating for nearly a year. That's not that long, by the way, for an engagement.
For a proposal?
Yeah.
A proposal. I do agree. I agree with you.
Abby has disliked Christmas since her parents died, so Harper spontaneously invites her to celebrate the holidays with her family in her hometown. Abby sees this as the perfect opportunity to introduce herself to Harper's parents and propose to her on Christmas morning. However, on their way to the Caldwells, Harper reveals that she lied already coming out to her parents, fearing it would interfere with her father's mayoral campaign. She promises to come out to her family after Christmas, but asks Abby to pretend to be her heterosexual roommate for the holiday, to which Abby reluctantly agrees. At the Caldwells, Abby meets Harper's father, Ted, her perfectionist mother, Hip Tipper, and her artistic sister, Jane.
Interesting.
Interesting description.
Yeah. Interesting A word.
Yeah, to describe.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, maybe change one of those vowels, one of those letters. She is welcomed by the family as Harper's orphan friend, in quotes, who has nowhere else to go on Christmas. Abby soon becomes uncomfortable, especially when she meets Harper's exes, Connor and Riley. Riley being a female.
Yeah, Riley, a woman.
A female woman.
Female woman. One of the female women I've heard so much about.
Yeah.
But still haven't met.
Someday.
Yeah. She also begins questioning how much she knows about her girlfriend when she sees Ted and Tipper's high expectations in Harper's competitive relationship with her older sister, Sloane. Ted is trying to impress a possible donor from the city council to contribute to his campaign, which Abby unwittingly jeopardizes when Sloane's children slip an unpaid-for necklace into her bag during an outing to the mall. Brendan's childhood mall, must be said. Labeled as a shoplifter, Ted and Tipper think it would be better if they keep Abby away from upcoming social events. As Abby starts to feel even more of an outsider, she learns from Riley that Harper has publicly denied her sexuality since high school, making her worried about their future. At the Caldwell's annual Christmas Eve party, Abby, having tired of her situation, is relieved when her best friend John arrives to pick her up. Harper privately begs her to stay, and as they are about to kiss, they are caught by Sloane, who prepares to expose their relationship to the family. However, wow, it's crazy that the last four paragraphs of this are about like the last 10 minutes.
I love it when we have Wikipedia summaries that are disproportionately focused on one part of the movie.
It's clear you can tell what the writer was really in on.
However, it turns out that Sloane has her own secret. She and her husband Eric are getting a divorce. The sisters get into a public fight, ending with Sloane outing Harper as a lesbian, which Harper tries to deny. Heartbroken, Abby leaves the house with John following her, and the two talk about their stories of coming out to their respective families. Abby's parents were loving and accepting, while John's father threw him out of their home and did not talk to him for 13 years. John reminds Abby that coming out can be terrifying for gay people, but has nothing to do with Harper's love for her. Realizing her fear of rejection caused her to hurt Riley and may cause her to lose Abby, Harper confirms to her parents that she is a lesbian. This inspires Sloane to reveal her own secret, and Jane and even Jane tells her parents how neglected she felt over the years. Afterward, Tipper confronts Ted about the emotional pain their daughters have experienced due to their parenting choices. Harper goes after Abby to apologize, confessing that she truly loves her and wants to build a life with her. Touched and with encouragement from John, Abby forgives her and they kiss. The next morning, Ted apologizes to his daughters for making them feel the way they always had to meet his standard of perfection. He later receives a phone call from the campaign donor who will only support him if Harper suppresses any details about her personal life. Ted rejects the offer. The Caldwells then take a family picture with Abby included this time. 1 year later, Abby and Harper are engaged. Jane has become a best-selling author with her fantasy novel, The Shadow Dreamers, and Ted has won the mayoral election. On Christmas Eve, the family goes to the cinema to watch It's a Wonderful Life. As the film starts, Abby and Harper smile at each other lovingly. The end.
That does, I think, the lopsided nature of the summary does accurately reflect how much crap is packed into, like, the last 30 minutes of this movie.
I was just thinking that.
In terms of plot and character beats.
And most of, I would say, the actual, like, real emotional meat doesn't come until the last 15.
It's a lot of antics earlier on. And it
does build to something.
No, it does. Yeah, I'm not going to say it doesn't, certainly.
But you're right. Like, we get the secret, we get...
We're cramming in a lot of character growth that's supposed to happen at the
all
end.
At once.
Yes, where all of it must happen off screen or just spoken so that, you know, we can progress the plot and wrap things up at this point.
Which I guess, you know, it would make sense that the story would focus on that because that's really where the interest was at the end. Abby is Kristen Stewart. Harper is Mackenzie Davis.
Right.
Allison Brie is Sloane.
Is Sloane.
Aubrey Plaza is Riley.
Thank you.
Daniel Levy is John, the friend.
Mary Holland is Jane.
Yep.
Right.
Victor Garber is the father. Ted. And
Mary Steenburgen is Tipper, the mom. Tipper. Okay, that's what mostly matters.
Anna Gasteyer is the donor.
Anna Gasteyer is the donor.
I guess.
Yeah, that's probably like the most. There's some other guy who plays her boyfriend, whatever, her high school boyfriend.
Yeah.
Whatever. It was really
recognizable,
matter.
But, you know.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we're getting to diminishing returns of, like, characters here at this point, but that's fine.
I think if you were to have to, like, elevator pitch, like, logline this movie, it's sort of Christmas movie plus Birdcage. Would you say that's accurate?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of an inverse
Birdcage?
Birdcage, because it's...
A cage bird.
A cage.
Kids instead of parents pretending. Right?
Correct.
Right. Before we get into this too much, I just want to throw out this real quick, just in terms of something that, you know, is not entirely accurate per se, but is usually a barometer that people look to. Happiest Season does have an 82% on the tomato meter on Rotten Tomatoes, and a 72% in terms of the audience reaction. So I think it's safe to say that this is a movie that is better received than probably any other movie we've done on this podcast.
Is that true?
I mean, I'm guessing. I don't know. Chris, I don't have these numbers in my head, man. What do you want from me?
Fair.
I'm just a boy. But I would venture to say that 82% is a pretty good rating on Rotten Tomatoes. It's maybe you want to talk a little bit, Chris,
about what
prompted you to bring this movie before us.
So it's not necessarily, I want to say, bad in the same way that maybe other movies we have covered are. But I do think this is a very, at the very least, a very interesting Christmas movie object.
Mm-hmm.
I think it plays with forms in kind of an interesting way, particularly within the idea of what a Christmas movie is. I think the tropes it tries to traffic in, where it does not balance successfully against its core narrative, but it is basically trying to marry a hijinksy holiday movie to a sort of birdcagey, like, hiding the gaze plot.
But is the birdcage not hijinksy also in its own way?
It's very hijinksy. Yeah.
Yes, but I guess what I'm saying is, I don't know. Like they try to make it Christmassy in this case. The ice skating, the white elephant.
Yeah,
Christmas.
I mean, I don't necessarily think for me at least, I don't necessarily think that the Christmas trappings are incongruous with a hijinksy movie.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I thought the main problem you have is the sort of way that the character's behavior is handled.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue that
this is more dramatic.
I think the problems that this movie ends up touching on, in my mind, are more emotionally complicated and kind of serious. That the swerve at the end to just wrap everything up really neatly and positively feels bizarre because so much dysfunction kind of comes to light in this family, and then you're just supposed to feel really warm and cozy about it at the end. I think it's a really interesting attempt at making a, like, gay Christmas movie. I even think the fact, I mean, I think it sort of fails in what it sets out to do, but I think it fails in a very interesting way. I don't think it's necessarily a bad movie, but I do think it's a very interesting and kind of fascinating one. I struggle to say that I like it, but I do think it is a really interesting movie to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair. I don't think any issues I have with this movie are tonally related. I think tonally it more or less gets what it's trying to do and executes it pretty well, I would say. Mm-hmm. The problems, I think, as Lee said, are all dramatic in nature. Yes. I think you have two main things. You have, which obviously we'll cover, but like one, as you said, the ending tries to rush a lot of character growth and choices and revelations into a relatively short amount of time to the point that none of it feels like you could plausibly believe that these characters are arriving at these conclusions. And the other issue is that one of the main characters, the behavior of one of the main characters is psychotic.
Well, so let's, I mean, and this to me is where the most birdcagey element comes in. So in the birdcage, the whole plot of my two gay dads basically have to pretend to be a heterosexual couple comes out of the son, Val, basically just being like, hey, my fiancé's conservative family isn't going to accept me having gay parents, so I need you to pretend to be straight so that they'll be okay with me marrying her. And that's a psychotic ask. And then similarly, Mackenzie Davis's character, Harper, waits until they're literally, like, on the drive up to her parents' house for Christmas to say, hey, remember when I told you that I came out to my parents and told them I was with you? Well, that's a lie. And now the Christmas you're coming to, I'm going to need you to not only pretend like we're not together, but also pretend to be straight.
Right.
And I find that initial ask to be insane, and then her subsequent behavior to keep maintaining the ruse to be absolutely outrageous. And then I feel like all of that builds and then slams into this, but I love you speech at the end that I'm not trying to tip too early, but it just, it's so bizarre what like a hard whiplash turn it is into a nice ending when I would be like, there's so many hanging threads of this issue that you guys need to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to like, I don't want to hammer on this too hard, but like, I think the key difference between The Birdcage and this movie is that I don't think that it's treated as insane as it is in The Happiest Season. Maybe it's not treated as insane in either movie, but, like, I feel like in The Birdcage, it's been a minute since I've seen it, but I feel like the parents are like, yeah, of course we have to pretend.
Yes.
Yeah, and also The Birdcage, all of it is played sort of for comedy.
For silliness.
Right, whereas in this one, it's sort of more like, no, like, this is a traumatic event for you to have to deal with the fact you're pretending to be straight, and so is your girlfriend. Within The Birdcage, it's all like, oh, can we pull the wool over their eyes? And it's goofs.
Well, so that's where the tone issue comes in for me. Yeah. I think in The Birdcage, they pull it off because they manage to take a crazy thing but still make it comedically light. In this, in Happiest Season, they let enough emotional reality into the issue that it's very difficult to find it funny.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I have that problem as much as you do. I know because you've mentioned that before. And I can see why you would have that problem. So, like, I don't think this is just, like, you. You know, like, this is not a you problem, certainly. I think, like, I can see a world where this comedy also has to deal with, like, the undercurrent of this sort of toxic family relationship. And it still can pay off in an emotionally satisfying way. I think the problem is not, like, a question of tone that a comedy can't do this. It's that this comedy does not do it well.
Yes.
I think that's the bigger problem here for me.
I mean, again, I don't find it funny in general. I think that's my problem with the movie. We'll talk about that when we get to the comedy bit. But
yeah.
I don't think I find it that funny in general.
The movie itself?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think that's my problem regardless. I do, like, I think if you wanted to make the movie about the problems that you're discussing, I think that that is a valid movie. My problem is the end of the movie then is, like, really everyone is just eating so much cake at the end.
Yes.
It's, and it like, it really wants to have that, like, magical happy ending. And
right.
Like, I don't understand how everyone got what they wanted out of this.
Right. Yeah, no, everyone just sort of agreed to, like, stop being an asshole to each other. And they're all just like, we're all good now, right? And everyone's like, yes, we are good now.
It's just one of those, like, skip ahead things. And it's like, wait a minute. Well, how?
Right. No, I agree with you.
And like Brendan was saying, it's like all of the resolution is mostly off screen. It's, you know, like, no, things are good now. It's fine.
Right. Yeah. For
so
a
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, for a character in their big speech at the end to literally be like, I will do all this work off screen to make sure that you feel appreciated for the rest of your life off screen.
Right.
That's all well and good for you to say that. And I can believe that you believe that. But nonetheless, I need to see this. I need to see that you did the work here a little bit.
Yeah. It's just too much has happened for it to really be reasonably wrapped up.
Yeah.
Just off of that speech.
I agree, yeah.
Yeah. I think if it had ended on, like, a sort of that, like, sort of messy Christmas morning thing, that would have been a lot better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's no cutting ahead to the future where it's like, and everything's
great. And everything's good now. Everyone's happier now.
Where there's like, it just a scene of everyone trying to be better people.
Right. No, I think like that's, yeah, I don't need to see that they are better people. Yes. I need to see you trying to do it. That's more important to me than knowing that you got there. The idea that you're, again, putting in the work to be better is a bigger plot point for
me. So I think that like, maybe if this was shipped as a rom-com, I think the one of the damning things I would say about it is that it's not very funny overall.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's more amusing than haha funny.
Yeah, and I don't think it does a great. It's sort of when it is trying to be funny, I think it's like successful 50% of the time.
Yeah,
and I think when that does the more dramatic bits, which I think if we're calling it a rom com, this does have more of that drama.
Yeah,
I think the drama is like mostly fine and good. Like again, I think that the characters behave a little insanely sometimes, like mm-hmm. we talked about. But I think that. I think you just handle that maybe a bit better in the writing and it would be fine. I just think that the ending then doesn't work if everyone's happy in the end.
Right. I mean, it almost feels like, I don't know what to describe it as, but almost, or like one of those like sliding plastic tile puzzles where like you move one piece to try and make it better and then you made something else worse. And it's like, you have to really work to make all these pieces assemble a picture at the end. Correct. But if you just slide one thing a little too far, it's like, well, now you've messed it up again.
Yeah. The key to those puzzles is you use squares.
The key to the puzzle is to snap all the pieces out and put them back in.
You do little squares, you do little like rotations, and then eventually the pieces will be what you want. Sorry, I love slide puzzles.
No, I you are a slide puzzle queen. To just back up very, very slightly.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. Go back to your original thing, please.
Because a lot of this movie is tied up in the idea of queer identity, but more specifically even, like, coming out, right? I mean, we actually get a really beautiful monologue from...
Dan Levy,
thank you. I can't remember
his
name.
John. His character's John.
Who... It's a lot about coming out. And I do actually... And, you know, as the movie says... Incredibly personal thing. That's not for anyone else to make that decision for you.
Right. It feels very educational.
In that moment, especially?
It feels very like, this is for the straight people.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
I mean, it is one of those... I'm not saying it's revelatory in any real way, but it is just sort of one of the... Where Kristen Stewart says, like, well, when I came out, my parents were great, and they accepted me. He's like, that's great. My dad, like, kicked me out of the house and didn't talk to me for years. Her parents are clearly unhinged. So you have to understand that coming out is a different process for everyone. And, like, yes... Yeah. It is. Well, I agree.
And to Lee's point, it does feel like that moment is there for straight people because there's no way Kristen Stewart makes it to this age and hasn't met another queer person who had a worse coming out experience.
No, that's absolutely true. You could argue that in the moment it's maybe just sort of...
A reminder.
I was going to say a reality check for her character, even though, again, I don't think her character is in the wrong here, but the movie seems to think that there's, you know, both sides have their problems going
here. It feels like it's like an after-school special kind of moment where it's like, and this is what coming out is like.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Kids.
Because you are right. I really, that's not meant for other queer people who are like, we know. Thank you so much.
Yeah, queer audiences understand this inherently.
Yeah, right. Naturally.
I mean, just, I would say, like, yes, I absolutely agree. It is entirely each individual's business, how they handle that. If you never tell your family that, that's entirely down to you. There is no right or wrong decision. Mm-hmm. However, where I would say the limit I will put on that is when you have been... If you have your girlfriend move in with you, and then you lead her into this ambush...
Yeah.
No, that is the...
That is unconscionable.
Right. I mean, so this is the thing that's weird, too, is so they're on the housetop in the beginning, in the mm-hmm. first scene, and Mackenzie Davis says... Come to my family's house for Christmas. And Kristen Stewart's like, I have to think about this. Then the next morning, Kristen Stewart's like, hey, I decided I will. And Mackenzie Davis is like, I don't know. Maybe you shouldn't.
I felt really bad, actually, for offering. I didn't mean to force you. You probably want to stay home.
Right. Which is like, that's your first moment right there to walk back the thing that you foolishly offered to mm-hmm. her. And like, you, again, well-intentionedly offered this sort of like, you wanted to like make her Christmas nice.
However,
I get that in theory.
I will point out, Harper is still attempting to hide the fact that she is lying about their relationship.
Of course. Yeah. But it's like, that's one of those moments where it's like, you were given the option to mm-hmm. back down, and her character did not take that off-ramp, you know? And so then later on, when they're in the car driving to the parents' house, and Harper's like, hey, can we pause for a moment?
I got something we got to talk about.
Right, yeah, there's something pretty big happening here.
It's actually very, I mean, again, I think like the whole Harper is just clearly worse off.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say narcissist.
I don't think narcissist, I mean.
I'm exaggerating.
This is like a person who's been like fucked by her family relationships.
Yeah, I think she's like incredibly like delusional and. Right. CPSTD.
Right, this is someone who should have sought therapy years
because,
ago.
Because, like,
CPSTD?
Childhood post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Oh, okay.
Because for the way that in the beginning she's like waxing poetic about her childhood
Christmases,
I'm like, they must have been miserable.
Right, no, that's the weird thing too, is that she's talking about like how wonderful it is. And it's like, I don't get the impression that at one point this family was healthy and then things fell apart.
Right.
The impression I get
bad.
Is that this family was always fucked up.
And always tightly wound.
Right. So I don't understand where this desire to bring your girlfriend home to your family is coming from.
Yeah, and I don't know why she loves Christmas so much.
Yeah. I mean, like, I feel like it's, I mean, you could love it because it's like, now I'm not with my family, so now I can enjoy myself
for
holidays.
But she clearly is like, you know, nostalgic for like family Christmases. She seems to think that they're great, but then it's like, as soon as she's met with the reality of it, it's horrible.
Right,
right.
So like, I mean, again, I think there's just a lot of like, there's just a lot of trauma built into the character. And I think if you dealt with that more, there would be a lot more understanding in Harper's motivations.
Mm-hmm.
But they kind of just paint her as a nutcase.
Yeah.
Well, because it ramps up over the course of the movie, right? Because it begins with, please pretend to be straight. And then it's like, oh, I'm so sorry my mom invented my ex-boyfriend. This is so embarrassing.
Yeah.
And then she's spending a lot of time.
Right, then it's like, I have to spend time with my ex and my friends from high
school.
Until
2 a.m.
Right,
and
it
very much kind of, like, checking in with her maybe for like a minute at a time. But I'm going to go back with my friends now.
Right,
and,
yeah, but I mean, you see three very damaged women in this family.
Yes,
yes.
And you don't hear anything about it until they all explode in the very end. And I think it's very clear to me that they're all fucked up.
Right.
Yes.
And they all have a lot of trauma about the way they were raised.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if we were just more obvious about that and dealt with it throughout the movie rather than have it all come out in the end,
mm-hmm.
I think that it would all track better. All of the motivations would make more sense.
Especially because they do a pretty good job of, like, weaving in moments for both Mary Holland and Alison Brie to show you the ways that their characters are, like, struggling.
Yeah.
Right.
It's just repeated hints, and
then
they don't mount to it then being the conversation at the end.
Yeah.
They just sort of repeat, and then it explodes.
And the problem is, sometimes I play them for comedy, and I'm like, no, that's not funny.
Right.
No,
this is just sad,
like, do you want me to come with you? Do you want me to come with you? Like, that's tragic.
Yeah.
I will say, Mary Holland, out of the three of them, is the one that does find occasional comedy in her characters.
Yeah, but I
sadness and
I know that you all like Mary Holland, and she is very funny, but I don't find the thing that she does in the movie funny, because I kind of resent when characters like this are just played for broad comedy.
Yeah, the family weirdo.
Well, I do agree with, like, it's one of those things where, like, maybe this is the closest I come to struggling with tone, where I do think the jokes are funny, but it's like, in real life, this is horribly tragic.
Yes!
That this child was, like, put in a basement bedroom. And it's like, I get that the movie knows that, and it's making a joke about how ridiculous this is, but, like, Mary Holland should be a lot more fucked up. You know what I'm saying? Like, this kid really fucking went through the ringer, perhaps more so than both of her sisters, at the expense of his family.
Yeah, and she gets, like, one earnest moment in the whole movie, which is the same time that the other sisters blow up.
Right,
it's like,
the painting.
Other
moment,
than that, she has to be a caricature.
Right.
And I don't really appreciate that.
Is one of those moments where at the end you feel like, okay, maybe she's okay being, like, this goofy stereotype. Like, this character seems to be cool with it, I guess, so I guess we're cool with it.
And I love that the intention was clearly to just, I love that moment where she's like, I like myself, and I thought that moment was cool.
No, I didn't. When she, I do like the whole thing with the painting where she's like, "This is something I made something. I made, like, I did do something, and none of you were appreciating it." And it's like that is a good moment, but it's sort of like we kind of walk it back a little bit with, like, some of the antics afterward, and then even at the end when you have the moment where Mackenzie Davis says, "I'm a lesbian," Alison Brie says, "I'm getting divorced," and then Mary Holland makes the joke and she's like, "Well, I have no secrets, but I am an ally." It's one of those things where it's like, it's fun, it's funny joke, haha, but, like, nonetheless,
but, like,
this is a this is like a character who's been traumatized.
And it continues to Lee's point to put her at least a half step, if a full step, below Alison Brie Mackenzie Davis as a character.
Right.
Yeah, because, I mean, again, the fact that she has that one moment implies that, like, there is a character there, but that she's not allowed to be that character.
Right,
she's
right.
She's relegated to comic relief for 90% of the movie.
I mean, I would say everyone's...
And laughed at.
Everyone's very real, tragic emotional struggle is undercut by the movie.
Yeah.
Mackenzie Davis is stuck in this delusional idea of, like, chasing her insane parents' approval to the point where she denies both herself and her girlfriend. Alison Brie seems to be living a completely, like, crazy existence where she feels like her only value is as a parent.
Yeah.
And that none of her actual accomplishments are recognized. Like...
Yeah. Well, it seems like she has a history also of being, like, not the preferred child.
Right.
Right. Where it's, like, it's interesting, like, I do kind of like that you see her room, and it is full of trophies also. It's like, you know this kid did very well. They say she was, like, in Yale or whatever.
Yeah.
When they're talking about it. So it's like, you know this person, like, does very well, but for whatever reason, the family is still just sort of like, but you're not this one.
Right.
And so, like,
Harper's the powerhouse.
Right.
Richard Harper
right.
says at one point.
Yes. And I do kind of like that as a concept.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like, I mean... We'll punt that down to characters later, because I think there's a lot to talk about, like, what is Alison Brie's character kind of in this movie. But anyway, so but was there anything else you want to say about, like, the queer nature of this?
I just also wanted to throw in there, I kind of feel like Dan Levy's character is a sort of... Yes, he is the one to kind of supply the after-school special bits, but I do also appreciate how they use him as a character to basically be an outside queer perspective on what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's actually pretty key to not making it feel like you're kind of locked in the hothouse of the situation. I appreciate that he's in there kind of pushing the other perspective in of, this is crazy,
I'm
coming to take you out of this situation.
Right.
I was very grateful for that character being there, because I think I would have gone a little crazier if he wasn't there to sort of balance things back in that direction
a
bit.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I think the one issue I kind of want to hammer home before we transition to another topic or something is just, I think, like, the biggest problem this movie has being a queer movie for me is that it conflates the idea of coming out to your parents is a difficult process, and you do not, you like, or your family rather, is a difficult process, and you do not owe your family anything in terms of that respect. Like, you can do whatever you want on your own time. You can tell them you can't. It's perfectly up to you. And it conflates that idea with, it is okay to drag another person
Correct.
Into this insanity
Correct.
If that's too hard for you. And so that's the biggest problem. It is one thing for Mackenzie Davis's character to not want to come out to her family because they fucking suck. It is another thing to then drag Kristen Davis mm-hmm. into it unwillingly.
Stewart.
Sorry, yes, of course. Kristen Davis here from Sex and the City.
Could you imagine?
Yes, that was, I think, the next season of And Just Like That, I believe, right? Anyway, so it's another thing entirely to bring Kristen Stewart into this family and only tell her halfway up on the car ride, mm-hmm. and then when she says, maybe I should leave, you say, no, keep, it's fine,
well,
this is all gonna be good.
And you're right, it's wild that for a queer movie, the movie does not really seem to recognize that as much as it maybe should.
Right, that's the thing that I find sort of the most unconscionable about this movie,
yes.
I think.
Whereas, like, I think it's beautiful they try to hold grace for her and try to make strides to make her not just, like, a flat villain, but I'm like,
I
kind of feel like we need to maybe be more explicit about how wrong that was.
I think it's just that, like, more work needed to be done with this character one way or the other.
Yes.
Either you have to acknowledge that this character is indeed doing something wrong, or you have to restructure her character so that she's not necessarily doing these wrong things, but you're still getting a lot of the same beats.
Yeah.
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 Which you could do.
You could do.
Yeah. Like I said, they need to kind of give more context to Harper, because as it is, it's just kind of like...
Yeah, that's the weirdest fucking... So, like, there's a scene... I can't remember who Kristen Stewart is talking to, if it's Aubrey Plaza or if it's... Dan Levy. But she says something along the lines of, like, boy, like, I thought I knew Harper so well. Like I've spent, you know, a whole year with this person and I knew her. And then she comes up here and she's, like, a completely different person. It's one of those things where it's like, is she a completely different person? Because I've got almost none of a read on who
mm-hmm.
Harper is as a character.
Yeah.
Beyond mm-hmm. she gets you to climb up on roofs with
right.
her. And that's kind of the extent, like, I feel like we needed so much more of who Harper is outside of her family
mm-hmm.
in the beginning of this movie in order to effectively feel like she's been get-outed as soon as she gets back
Absolutely.
To her home life.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Get-outed is such a good verb.
I would argue we need to know more about both of them.
I think, see, I'm
but
kind
I,
of...
But Harper is the one
yeah.
we need maybe know more, just
right.
because she's the one who is going to have the flip, right?
Right,
yeah.
Yes. I think what we know about Kristen Stewart works fine enough for the character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's you just sort of need to know how she feels about...
Right.
Yes. Yeah, so.
And I think it also leans on, similar to how I think you pointed this out, Kristen Stewart is just, her vibes are lesbian. She looks like a lesbian. I mean, it's...
She has aggressively queer vibes. And it's just like, it almost feels like that should be more of the joke, that the parents are just so incapable of recognizing. Right. Like, so like when you see her at the end and she's wearing like a suit with like a skinny tie and the shirt unbuttoned, it should be like, there's like more of a joke should be made that like the parents are just like, wow, like you just have such a unique taste or something like that. Such interesting fashion choices that they're just not realizing like all like these red signs pointing to her that say lesbian.
Lesbian. Yes. She should pull up in a Subaru. So the next thing I wanted to go on to, assuming we had nothing else to say about queer things, well, it'll come back.
Yeah.
The comedy. Lee had mentioned before, it's just not really that funny. So I kind of wanted to talk about maybe what comedic bits worked, but also the ones that didn't.
I think the comedy might work for me a little bit more than it does for both of you. I'm not saying it's consistently funny.
Yeah.
And I think that there are characters who are consistently funny, which obviously I think Mary Holland is consistently funny, even though you do have the weird undertones of her being this sort of like sad, broken child who's like, who's basically living in this world. And Mary Steenburgen is very funny. But again, I mean, it's again one of those things where like these are all funny things, even though there is like a dark underbelly.
Yes.
Like Mary Steenburgen is funny, but she is this sort of, you know, monopolizing, terrifying housewife.
Suffocates or whatever room she's in.
I mean, I think with Mary Holland, I also find, I think that it just happens a lot with characters who are sort of coded neurodivergent.
Yes.
And I kind of don't like that about these types of characters where it's like, we're supposed to laughing at them.
Mm-hmm.
And
no, that's true.
Their behavior is outwardly goofy, but it's not necessarily goofy.
It is not quite as bad as Sheldon, but it is a little Sheldon adjacent.
Yeah. It's in that direction.
Where it's like, you can clearly tell that there is something about this character, but they're not saying what it is so that they're not beholden to whatever that might be, you know?
Yeah.
I think, for me, I think it comes down to how well different characters were handling their, or different actors were handling their character games. I wouldn't go so far as to say anyone is bad in this movie, but I think some people handled the game, their game, better than others. So, like, Mary Holland's game is very tough, I agree, and there's, like, a dark undercurrent to it, but I think of all the people, she found moments that are line reads that were, like, fun or funny.
Yeah.
And I would say that it's like, again, like Mary Steenburgen's character is just supposed to be the most passive aggressive creature you've ever met in your life. But she finds the most consistently successful moments of comedy there.
Right. I think maybe the issue, if we are kind of dipping into tone briefly for a moment here, is just that this movie only has three, we'll say, because I would probably throw Dan Levy in there as well, three characters who are kind of consistently funny, and the other ones who are a little more grounded and realistic. Do you know what I mean? So you have things like, I think there are supposed to be jokes with Alison Brie's character, but they're sort of played a little too straight,
I
think, to sort of work as jokes.
There's not enough height to
her character. And with Victor Garber, we don't know a whole lot of his personality, frankly, beyond wants to be mayor. So it's not even, he doesn't even have like a comic persona to play.
I don't even know, like, what is he fucking, what's his fucking campaign platform?
I have so many questions. Okay, yeah.
What does he want?
What are his politics?
What does his donor want?
Is he a Republican? Because he gives that speech at the country club where he's talking about, like, we have to, like, protect our communities.
And
like,
faith at one point.
Right, yeah, and all that shit. So it's like, you're coding him as a Republican. A Republican's not going to be the mayor of Pittsburgh, Victor Garber. Don't sink your money into this. It's never going
to
happen.
And the donor didn't want to fund a gay...
Right.
No, that's the thing. Like, she seems very conservative in terms of her politics. So it's like, it feels like these people are indeed being coded as Republicans, but the movie never says what
they
are.
They were too scared to confront the politics.
I agree with you. I think it was definitely... I think they were worried that if they say the R word, things get too heavy. Yeah, all of a sudden.
Not that R.
No, not that R word. The worst one.
But yeah, no.
That's literally a note I have is like, what are Victor Garber's politics here?
Perfection.
Yes.
Family. No, but I absolutely agree with that. I think the comedic bits that worked the most for me were physical bits and background gags. I thought Dan Levy's character's whole
just
little background arc about the fish.
Killing the fish and finding a new fish.
Funny.
Yeah,
it was
like
solid.
That.
It wasn't setting the world on fire. It's a simple setup, a simple execution, but it was funny.
The bit where they have to pull up a chair at the restaurant and for whatever reason, the chair is like so much tinier.
Right, it's like a different chair or something. You're right.
Yeah.
So like, yeah.
And so like, Abby, Kristen Stewart has to like, she's just like sitting next to her.
Looks like a child. Yeah.
Looks like a child.
It makes that clip from that streamer that you showed us a little earlier very apropos of like, you're just like, you're seeing person's like face just get cut off halfway because they're in such a low chair.
The table is cutting off.
Yes.
The table's so high.
That's a very good visual business. I think that's very fun.
Yeah.
I did think moments like those were the most successful for me. I like, again, simple, there's no lock on the door, but don't worry, you'll have total privacy. And basically, at some point, virtually every character comes through the door of poor Abby's room.
I think this movie's especially tough for me because I, as somebody who like hates family gatherings...
This is one
holidays,
from hell.
And like for whom the Christmas Vacation movie, whatever the fuck that movie
National
is,
Lampoons,
the National Lampoon,
with Chevy Chase.
With Chevy
about.
Chase is like a fucking horror movie.
It is. makes me feel uncomfortable actually.
Yeah,
when I watch
it's
it.
Deeply uncomfortable, and I hate it. This is kind of, it gives me that kind of same vibes where I just can't find the comedy because I'm just like, God, I hate all this stuff.
That I think is my overwhelming. Like, I can intellectualize my issues with this movie to absolute death, but I think the core of it is, I am too stressed out by this movie to find it
funny. No, I think, and I mean, like, and I'm not saying this, like, against you two guys, but it's like, everyone is bringing their own baggage to something like this, right? And
1,000%.
It's like, I have different baggage than you guys do
1,000%.
With this sort of thing. So, like, I'm obviously not going to tell you that your reading on this is wrong or bad.
Yeah,
Like, I think for, like, you two guys, you probably react worse to this than I do because I don't have this sort
of... Brendan's baggage is, that's my mall.
Yes. My baggage is...
Oh, I walked down that street, you said while we were watching.
Yeah. My grandparents lived
in this neighborhood.
Oh, nice.
This is Lawrenceville.
And meanwhile, Lee and I are over here, like, rocking in our seats, chewing our nails
like,
off.
Everything happens, like, you know, Kristen's character getting, like, sidelined and, like, I'm just like, God, this
brutal.
Is a bummer. Everything is such a bummer. I hate families. I hate this stuff.
And I'm not trying to get TMI with it, but I just the experience of being at a significant other's Christmas where it feels so stressful and weird and uncomfortable and dark, and I was like, I think it was honest, and this is, I know it's a me thing, but it was too real for me.
No, and I think,
it was,
and again,
too
that's
real
perfect,
for me.
That's why like everyone's response to a movie is perfectly valid, because it is their response to it, you know, because like I don't have that sort of background or something like that happened to me, so it's like, for you, I get it. That would, like, I can see why you don't find that enjoyable to watch.
Yeah. And I also just thought, like, so much of the visual language works to isolate Kristen Stewart in an effective way, but again, in a way that doesn't make me, is not fun, at least not in my experience. The fact that her room is also storage. The fact that there's that shot of her through the basement window, which is like brutal.
Right, it's like she's in a prison or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I thought the whole subplot with the kids slipping the necklace into her bag was, again, brutal, uncomfortable, really didn't like it. There is just, like, there are moments in this that felt so nasty that I was just, like...
The bit where after that happens and the mom is like, I can't find my...
Right, if it were to find its way back to my dresser...
Yeah,
I won't ask
yeah. Yes.
That was well done!
Yeah, when Kristen Stewart's just like, I don't have it, and Mary Steenburgen's just like,
okay.
Just like this sort of, like, okay then.
Well, and I can appreciate the choices Mary Steenburgen's making in that moment.
Yeah.
Like, she's...
Yeah.
She finds the comedy, and she's doing it. But
good.
It is one of those moments where this is a dark comedy in that moment. Yeah.
It's dark if you have family baggage.
Yeah. Agreed. And, like, again, for some people, it is hard to mine comedy from situations like this.
Yeah.
And that's perfectly fine.
I would be fascinated to know, and this makes me wish we had maybe found a heterosexual to be a guest in this episode.
Ugh.
I would...
Can you imagine?
Killed to have known what their take was on this. Because we inexorably have a very different lens from that. And from each other. But I just mean, that would be a meaningful difference. I would be very interested in investigating.
No, that's true.
Was there anything else we wanted to say about the comedy?
No, I don't think so.
Aside from the fact it's just not that funny on the balance, at least we don't feel that way.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying with some of this. I really do. Where I think, like, the problem, I think, for me is that certain characters are played broadly for comedy and other characters are played pretty straight.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the problem. And so it's like, a little wacky to have Mary Holland, like, going full-on gonzo in one scene and also have Victor Garber, you know, doing relatively grounded, emotional... you know, terrorism.
Right. So, well, and I do
but
think...
But again, he's so, like, ignorant that he's doing it.
Right, no, that's the thing. No, you know, it feels very much like that. Like, this guy literally has no idea that he's doing something wrong.
Like, it's more like society is the...
Right.
Because,
it is,
like,
right.
They don't think that they're terrorizing their kids.
Right, no,
they
I agree.
They are just thinking, we need our kids to look good.
This is the weird thing, because I feel like Victor Garber doesn't feel like he's terrorizing the kids. Mary Steenburgen feels like she kind of knows that she's making people a little bit miserable and kind of relishes it. And I think, again, that comes down to the fact that Mary Steenburgen is mostly playing this as a comic character.
Correct.
And Victor Garber doesn't really have the comedy to do, so he's just sort of playing it straight.
I think it is also maybe potentially an issue with the mix of characters.
Yeah.
And because, like you were alluding to, I think we have Dan Levy. Mary Holland is the most heightened of
the characters.
She's
the most elevated.
But her, Dan Levy, and Mary Steenburgen, those are the three most out-and-out comedy characters in this.
Right.
And everyone else is sort of different levels of serious, or like a dramatic character. And I think if this were to work and to be darkly funny instead of just awkwardly funny and then serious at other points, you needed at least another character to be somewhere on the comedic spectrum. Because Harper, not funny. Abby, not funny. Victor Garber, not funny.
Yeah.
Sloane, I think, is meant to be a comedy character, but not funny.
Yeah.
And Alison Brie, we know that she can fucking crush a comedic moment.
No,
she's amazing.
I think she tries. I think she
tries.
Yes. No.
I feel like a lot of our conversation has been character-driven for good reason.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like a lot of the antics in this are sort of middling, but it's the characters that are really, like, the attraction here. So I guess unless anyone else has something to say about comedy more broadly, we'll just scoot into characters.
Sure.
No, let's do that.
Shall we start with our main gal, Kristen Stewart, as Abby?
I like her in this. I think she's... Again, the character's a little thin, as we've said, but I think she brings good instincts and good energy to the role. I think she's sympathetic.
I agree.
I do agree that, again, this is going to be a recurring thing. We've already said it 20 times, but, like, she doesn't have enough comedy to play, so she's just kind of forced to...
She really sad.
Yeah, so she's just sort of forced to play this character as, like, a realistic person, which contrasts, again, as we said, with other characters. So I do think that's sort of an issue that I wish the movie had balanced better. That being said, I think she's fine as a character.
Absolutely.
I think she works fine as a character.
I think, like, mostly it's fine because she's sort of an audience surrogate where it's like, we know how we're supposed to feel because that's how she feels. But, like, the one thing that I don't have enough context for her character, and the one thing that I would ditch or provide context for, is why she feels so ready to propose.
I do agree with you, because I do agree. You
That's
said it during this. 1 year is a very quick... And also, not only is it a fast time to propose, it's a fast time to then tell your girlfriend's father that you want him to give his blessing and then propose at Christmas morning in front of the whole family.
Yep.
Like, that's a huge thing. That's like, you do a family proposal after you've met them several times.
Yeah.
I think. It's like, you know, this is not day one conversation you have with someone's family.
Yeah.
I think what we needed was two things. I think, A, they needed to be together longer to justify the proposal. And I also think we just needed to see more of their relationship dynamic, because we only get, what, two scenes of them as a couple?
Yeah, and that doesn't seem great, because it seems like she's forcing Kristen Stewart to, like, find the fun that she has with them.
Right, no, it is, because literally the introduction scene is, like, them looking at holiday lights, and Mackenzie Davis is like, isn't this fun? Like, do you find this fun?
Kristen
Stewart's like, do you find it fun? If so, then sure.
And I feel like the revelation about the parents comes too late in the movie. They loved Christmas, and that's why I'm sort of down on it now. I wish it had come sooner.
I see, that doesn't bug me, because I feel like you can kind of get it in terms of subtext that she's just not big on the holiday. Because, I mean, it's a family thing, obviously, right? It's like, she is with this other family. Her own family is dead. I feel like I can get, you know, just... Maybe it's just because every fucking Christmas movie is like, the family is so important to Christmas, that if your parents were dead, I would be like, I get why you're down during this time of year without you having to explicitly tell me why you're down.
I agree that Kristen Stewart communicates it in subtext, and I think she does a great job of that. I just think it's crazy this wouldn't have been a conversation she would have had more explicitly with her girlfriend about this.
See,
I feel weird about Christmas because of this.
My thought would be, in theory, Mackenzie Davis already knows this.
Mm.
I feel like this is probably... this probably would have come up at some point, you know? I feel like arguably you could read Mackenzie Davis's behavior in the first scene of the movie where she's saying, are you having fun? Is her way of being like, I know this is a hard time of year for you.
Got it.
So do you, like, are you enjoying it? I'm trying to make you feel like this is a great time of year. Is it working? And I feel like you could read it that way.
And if you wanted to be less charitable to Mackenzie Davis, you could be like, you're trying to prod her into saying you're having a good time,
course,
so she feels good
course.
About the decision.
Of course, absolutely. And I think, unfortunately, it kind of reads that way.
Yes.
But I think it's the sort of thing where, in retrospect, you can look back at it and be like, maybe it was meant to be X this whole time, and I just thought it was Y.
Right.
But, like, maybe that's giving too much credit. I don't know.
Do we want to move on to Mackenzie Davis?
I think we should move on to Mackenzie Davis, who's kind of the biggest
plot catalyst
problem I have with this movie in terms of characters.
I do just want to say before we get into the character itself, Mackenzie Davis, great actor.
Yeah, I got nothing.
I think she does fantastic in the role.
I think she does as fine as anyone could do in a role that has literally no personality beyond when I go back home, I turn into a Stepford kid. You know, it's just like that's all I know about her as a person is that all I know about her. I don't know anything. Again, when Kristen Davis is saying, I thought I knew this person, and now she's a whole different person at home, it's like, no, I don't know who she is when you know her. All I know is that she did great at school, she had a boyfriend, her parents loved her, she was a very big achiever. Like,
right.
This is all I've got.
We know who Victor Garber thinks she is.
Right, right. We knew who she was, or who she pretended outwardly to be years ago, but I have no idea who she is right now. So,
she's scared.
What's it?
She's scared.
Right, I mean, that's kind of all you get, is that she's emotionally
traumatized girl.
By her family. Yeah. But, like, I need to know a little bit about her so that I can kind of understand what Kristen Stewart sees in her, you know? And, like, I don't think that's hard to do. I don't think that requires a lot of effort. Kristen Stewart is literally going to propose to her, so I need to know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to propose to her after a year, so I need to know why.
After not even a year.
Yeah, right.
Less than a year.
Yeah.
I think I've already kind of expounded a little on my problems with the story vis-a-vis Harper and that she needs more context on why. So I don't know if I need to repeat all that, but yeah, like, in summary, yeah, she's just clearly trauma. The movie does not really delve into it. I do think if we did talk about it more earlier, then her motivations would become a lot clearer.
Yes.
And it wouldn't feel, she'd become a lot more sympathetic.
Right.
Even if some of the stuff she does is pretty terrible.
Right. I think I don't think, like, she's allowed to do terrible things and we can understand why she's doing terrible things. If you are doing terrible things, I need to at least know why you're doing them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, I think that's all you really need to do. She can still be making mistakes. I just need to know a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I mean, the other thing is too, is her relationship with, what's Aubrey Plaza's character? Riley? Is that her character? Yeah. So you find out, when Kristen Day, or, oh my God, Kristen Day, I'm literally never going to say, when Kristen Stewart is talking to Aubrey Plaza at the drag bar or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I think it's then. Aubrey Plaza talks about how they were together in high school and they would leave each other like little cute notes in their locker. And then at one point, someone found a note that Aubrey Plaza had left in Mackenzie Davis's locker that said, like, I love you so much. And Mackenzie Davis is like, she's a lesbian and she is obsessed with me.
Right.
And so you find out that Aubrey Plaza is basically like her high school experience was made hell because Mackenzie Davis lied and said, oh, I'm not with her. I'm not like her. She just won't leave me be because she's such a big lesbian. I can't stand it. This is literally what happens in Mean Girls.
Yep.
And that movie knows that what Regina George does is bad.
Yeah.
This movie seems to just sort of think like, look, it was a hard time for everyone. And I get it. High schoolers are stupid. We do stupid things. We have too many hormones and too many emotions going around. It's even harder if you're queer. But, like, there's a difference between being an idiot and being outwardly malicious. And the fact that also it seems that she hasn't atoned or apologized to this until the end of the movie when the party has fallen apart and Aubrey Plaza is about to leave. Mackenzie Davis basically just sort of says sorry to her. It's like, how many years have passed since this happened? And you haven't tried to at least sort of make this cool?
And what's worse is she describes the experience that Kristen Stewart, I almost said Davis, talked to
I know,
you,
I'm sorry, I'm sparing it.
Is basically experiencing. She had to watch then Harper deny her in front of her family. I'm not a lesbian, that's a lie. And I guess this is going back to a larger issue I have with the movie, but I'm like, it's so hard for me to imagine seeing that moment and then taking that person back.
I agree, I agree.
That's
really
hard for me to get there.
Yeah, no, I know. It'd be a lot easier to swallow just without that one moment.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Because then it feels like, oh, we've gone a bit far now.
Right, no. It's just you're doing all the horrible things you did before once again. So how are you growing? Are you growing? Anyway, go ahead.
Aubrey Plaza is Riley?
Great. I love her.
Sexy, funny.
Yeah. She's got great chemistry with Kristen Stewart. It's what, like, again, I wish I got to see Mackenzie Davis have that great chemistry mm-hmm. with Kristen Stewart, because I don't get to see it in this movie.
There are several moments
I think they could.
Where I'm like, give us their rom-com between Kristen Stewart and Aubrey Plaza. That would
yeah,
be fun.
I mean, the one thing I have to say is I feel like so much on Letterboxd you see a lot of reviews of people just being like, she should have just gotten with Aubrey Plaza. And it's like, no, that's insane too. It would be equally yeah, insane to have yeah. a girlfriend whom you're about to propose marriage to, and then after meeting Aubrey Plaza twice, you're like, just kidding, I'm leaving you for this woman who lives in a town like an hour away from me, and now I'm going to be with her instead. So like, right. no, I understand your instincts because you're watching two actors have chemistry on right. screen, which you don't get with the actual girlfriend.
Correct.
But that's bad too. That's not a fix.
Correct. I don't know where to go next. Should
Mary
we
Holland.
Mary Holland as Jane?
Yeah, I think
she's a funny.
Yeah,
the Edith Crawley of the family.
Yes, definitely yeah. the Edith. I mean, we've talked about her because it's just
we know Mary Holland.
Yeah,
I mean,
we love
she's
Mary Holland.
Always very funny.
Right, a very funny woman.
I don't blame her for. Well, I might blame her a little because she's co-wrote the movie.
She did co-write the movie,
so I might blame her a little bit for
just
the character.
A scooch.
Yeah.
But I don't blame her for acting.
No, I think
as,
she...
As written.
Yeah, again, she sells the comedy well. It's
yeah.
not
she
a fault of hers.
She finds what comedy is to be found in the character, I think.
Yeah.
There's just so many line readings of hers that I was absolutely in love with. I think my absolute favorite is towards the beginning of the movie when they are, I think when they go to dinner initially, and someone asks Jane about the book she's writing, and like, you've been writing for 10 years, right? She's like, yeah, it takes a long time to build a world.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh!
I think it's just like
so
a,
good.
I think it comes back to the tone thing, because I don't want to like, there's kind of like that line you hit where it's like, well, you can't ever, what, can you, are you saying you can't ever have like weird, goofy other characters? And it's like, I don't think I'm saying that, but I think that it just is at odds with everything else that happens in the movie, especially when she then gets like a really sad moment later on.
Correct.
Yeah.
Well, and I think it is, you bring up the point that like the comedy is driven by her being neglected and shoved aside by her family for all her life.
Yeah.
And I think that's understandable to be like, that's a tough thing to then play comedic.
Right. I think it's one thing to be a little weirdo. It's another thing to be like, my family has been ignoring me my
yes,
entire life.
Basically, you can sort of see the desperation.
Right.
We're asked to laugh at her trauma, but find Harper's trauma sympathetic
right.
and ultimately redemptive. In
right. And it's one
way.
Of those things where I don't want the movie to do this per se, but you could have it take a dramatic turn for her character at the end where she's like, this is my defense mechanism. Like, I'm leaning into like being this like quirky kid because otherwise I'm just not getting anything from you people
yeah.
whatsoever. So
yeah.
like, I need to do this or else I'm just not being noticed at all. And like, I don't want it to be sort of like a twist, like what a twist all this time. Mm. But I feel like there is something more you could play, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway.
She's not really that excited about turning the internet back on.
No.
Alison Brie as Sloan?
Yeah, so I don't think her comedy works
nope.
in this movie. There's a lot. The running joke for her basically seems to be, one, Victor Garber doesn't seem to think she can do anything and only values
mm-hmm.
her as sort of a prop who can stand there with her handsome husband and two twins.
Mm-hmm.
And two, she's hyper-competitive with Harper about
mm-hmm.
everything. So, you know, they when they're at the ice skating rink, they start to race each other, and it's really intense, and just, it seems like these two sisters fucking hate each other's
mm-hmm.
guts because every interaction
yeah.
they have is just sort of laced with like barbs and all that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
So it's one of those things where like, again, this for me, this is really striking the chord of this is not funny, this is sad.
Yeah.
So that's the moment. It's just that I don't think the jokes that she's given are strong enough to rebound from that. So all it comes off as is just sort of what like, and again, who is this woman? We've heard that she was head of her class at Harvard or Yale, whatever the fuck it was, but now she makes decorative gift baskets with her husband, who also left his job as a lawyer to make gift baskets. But like, what happened?
And they're like chasing this weird diet goop.
Well, they have Gwyneth said that like
right.
they said that Gwyneth
they're
was
like,
using them or something.
They're partnered with
yeah.
her or something.
And it's just like, what happened in their lives
mm-hmm.
to make them change this? Again, is it something that Victor Garber subtly did? Was he just sort of like, well, like I guess being a lawyer is great, but like, what if you had a family? I think that would play really well.
I think which is also quite tragic, just making this even a darker situation, is, I mean, you see repeatedly him just sort of hand wave Sloane's accomplishments to be like, oh, but Harper.
Right.
And you can see the world in which this has been happening since they were kids, and then that creates this hatred between the two of them.
Right. No, like, it's all very, you know, there's logic, there's explanations.
Man, these people need fucking family therapy. Yeah, this exactly. is up there with Family Stone and just like, you guys just shouldn't be in each other's lives, probably.
Correct. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. Anyways.
I guess Mary Steenburgen?
She's funny.
As mom?
Again, funny.
She's funny.
Yeah,
I think
I mean,
we kind of covered a lot
kind
of her.
A passive-aggressive cartoon.
A very accurate portrayal
Lost.
Of this type of...
Yeah, like, this is a very real persona.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
This is someone you know in real life.
Tipper, what a great
yeah,
name.
Her name is Tipper.
Mm-hmm. Victor Garber.
I like Victor Garber, but again, he doesn't really have anything to play beyond I'm worried about this election.
Well, he's got my vote for mayor.
Chris,
there's
you're voting Republican.
Like, one-fourth of a character for this character.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Right. And so, and also, like, again, this whole thing about this running for mayor thing is a relatively recent development. So, again, is the movie trying to say that at one point he was a little more normal and this is the thing that pushed him over? Again, were Christmases good once? Were they always bad?
My wildest guess is no, I don't
right.
think
no, I don't think they were either. So, it just, it feels like the movie kind of wants you to think, oh, no, at one point this family worked, but, like,
did
they
it?
Don't. Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe that's my misreading.
They certainly make it difficult to imagine this family ever,
I agree.
Getting along. I think that's about it. I don't really know if we can talk about anyone else. I mean, Dan Levy?
Dan Levy's fun. I think he's funny.
He has little bits that kind of are threaded throughout the movie that are... Mm-hmm. He's always tracking people.
Yeah, he's
which
always
also
tracking
is,
people.
Which also is a handy plot expedient
as
well.
Yes, which pays things off at the ending. Yeah. His little bit with killing the fish is funny.
Very funny. Like that.
I got nothing bad for him.
I like his little playing straight and feeling up the
ex-boyfriend's
arm.
Muscles, yeah.
Yeah, I also... I mean, it's always great when, like, the bit where it's like, you're doing really bad at it and the guys that you're talking... That he's talking to is like, what?
What are you talking about?
Do you pump? And he's like, do I what?
As the living, I was like, yeah, how much do you bench? Oh, like,
a thousand. Yeah. And he sort of gives him a look.
Like, it's just like, what? That was, but again, like, those are just sort of, like, tiny side moments that are amusing, but you kind of wish those were more successful.
Yeah.
Unless anyone else has anything else to say, I think we're on to fixes, my friends.
I would just like to say that it's insane to drive from Grove City to the Ross Park Mall to do a little bit of Christmas shopping.
How long of a drive is that?
Like an hour.
Oof.
Yeah, I know. Shouldn't do it. The Grove City outlets are right up there.
They should have consulted you.
Not as filmable.
I can go first.
Go for it.
So here, this was one of those fun, fortuitous things where about an hour after I first watched this movie, I was like, okay, I know what has to be done here. So there's two ideas. One is a half-assed one, which I usually do. So the basic idea is that, like, you should just refocus the movie to be less about literally being forced back into the closet and almost make it metaphorical. So I think one thing that this movie does well that I kind of enjoy is the sort of weirdness about spending Christmas with a partner's family. Yeah. You see your partner in a whole different light, and it's almost like even though they've been away from their family for years, they kind of almost revert back to the way they used to be. Mm-hmm. And you see, like, all these traditions that, like, you know, it's like, oh, we always go here for dinner on Christmas Eve or something. Like, all these, like, dumb things where it's like, oh, we always go down to look at, like, the tree that gets lit up down the street. It's just, like, all these stupid fucking things that make no sense to you.
We always
are
do
very
this the
important.
Night before.
Right, yeah. Yeah, right. We always put on our footy pajamas and drink hot cocoa in front of the fire and don't talk for an hour.
Or, like, watch this movie or...
Right, right, yeah. And so, like, I think you could make a good comedy about just the idea that you are feeling slightly left out by this family unit. And it's not that you're literally being forced into the closet, because I think I would remove that entire subplot, but just the idea that sort of, like, you're feeling weirdly othered by this as a concept. I think there's a lot of juice you can get from that sort of thing. You can still play with the idea that Harper's family is conservative, if not, like, politically, then, like, small c conservative and traditional, which I think they are. So they have very rigid ideas about what the holidays are. That's universal comedy shit. Like, that's so easy to do. It speaks to a lot of people. You can mine a lot from that kind of thing. But I think the thing is, this movie doesn't want to be incidentally queer, which is something we talked about earlier, where a movie just happens to be gay by the fact that there are two gay characters in the lead. And I think this movie wants to say something more about the queer experience.
Much more directly.
So if that's the case, what we want to do, what we do is this. We need to see more of the relationship prior to the visit, so we have a sense of who Harper is as a person, what their relationship is actually like, because we get none of this. I would remove the idea of Abby wanting to propose entirely. I don't think it's something that the movie needs. It does not need this extra level of commitment. I think it's just enough for them to have been in a relationship and they were going to meet her family for the first time. I think Abby already knows that Harper is not to her family. This is something that unequivocally she must be aware of prior to this. I don't think it's something that she tells her. I think she goes into the movie. When we see this character, she already knows that she is not out to her family. So this is not a revelation to her in any way. Maybe Harper is feeling pressured by her family to come home because of the family's the dad's mayoral campaign. So it's like, even though I'm not out to them, I really need to come home because my dad's going to like grind his teeth about this until I do. This is, I think, the most basic thing you can do because so much of the plot can just unfold as it is. It just the fact that this character did not enter this unwillingly through deception.
Because it throws everything off.
This also can show you a little bit more about how, like, this is affecting Harper and why she's kind of acting like a weird monster. You know, it's just the idea that, like, your family is basically putting you back into who you were in high school. And they're being like, you were, like, the best kid ever, and we're so proud of you, and, like, you have not developed as an adult beyond age 17.
Right.
Love ya. So I think that's relatable shit. I like the idea that Abby bonds with Riley, but I kind of want Riley to stress that while there's still some weird vibes with her and Harper, obviously, Harper more or less kind of tried to make amends to her years ago. They're not super close friends, and they're certainly like not going to date or anything like that, but Harper did some level of work to try and atone for her being a shitty person in high school. So this shows that Harper is trying to do some right things, even if she's, you know, she's human and she has setbacks. I was debating a little bit about the timeline, but I think what has to happen is I think you can still have that fight on Christmas Eve. I think then you need to spend some time afterwards. So the idea is the conclusion now happens on like New Year's Eve or some shit like that. So after the big fight happens, Abby leaves with John, and at this point, the focus of the movie can kind of entirely shift to Harper, like exclusively, where Harper decides what she has to do. She has a lot of involved discussions with the people in her family, with both her parents, and I think they can have similar reactions to how they do in the movie, where Tipper is a little like realizing that actually, oh, our family's kind of fucked up. And Ted is a little more internal and not maybe willing to sort of speak his mind at first. Sloane, my biggest fucking problem with this is Sloane gets off the hook so fucking easy in this movie. Sloane is an awful person and her kids are awful kids.
Terrible.
And all they do after getting her in trouble with mall security, they don't even say we're sorry. I think they just say like, we put the necklace in your backpack.
Yeah, it's
like, they're not even apologizing. So like, these kids fucking suck and no one ever, like, they're not punished. Then immediately after, they're like, can we open presents? It's Bobby. They're like, sure, kids. Go up to your house. Like, no, these kids need to be fucking punished. The conversation with Jane, I think it's just sort of that Harper needs to do the work to make Jane feel like an actual human being in the family. And with Riley, just to sort of reiterate the fact that she's sort of stuck in a toxic loop, even if it's just the two of them kind of venting to each other. The last part then can happen on New Year's Eve with Harper finding Abby at some party where she's out with John and maybe Riley, because maybe like they both kind of helped Harper find where Abby was. And Harper can apologize for putting Abby in that situation, tell her what she's talked over in the last few days, and the work she's planning on doing, like, oh, I'm getting a therapist in the new year. I've already got the number here. Like, don't worry, this is definitely 100% happening. And just sort of awkwardly spills her guts to her and tells her how she feels about her. So then you can have like the big rom-com kiss. There's two options for the family, and then I'm wrapping this up. You can end it happily with them all trying to work out together as a family, where they talk about like how this weird quest for perfection has fucked them all up entirely. I think if you chose to do this, Ted needs to drop out of the mayoral race entirely. I think he will not have his family fortune sunk into this mayoral race, because that is a crazy thing to do. And he needs to do his own soul searching, basically, before he can like get involved in politics again. He seems like a Republican, so maybe I think you need to have a throwaway line during the end credits where he's like, actually, I'm an independent now.
Right.
And I'm going to be running as an independent candidate, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I can denounce my party's conservative views, like, better late than never, fucko. The other ending, which seems to be more realistic to me, is frankly, maybe Harper decides that like the rest of her family actually sucks, and she kind of cuts them out except for Jane. Maybe Tipper, since Tipper seems to be a little more self-aware of what's going wrong. And so I think it could just end with her being like, they're out of my life now. They were my family at one point. You are my family now. And this is like, this is the work I'm doing. You are my new family unit. This is what I want to be part of now. And maybe that's like less fun and a little less Spirit of Christmassy, but I think to me it rings real. So I don't know. That's what I got.
I agree that it should not be like sprung on Abby. Yes.
Yeah.
Kristen Stewart.
Yeah, Abby is Stewart.
I'm like staring at the castle to make sure I got it right. But I actually kind of want this, I'll still center it on the two main characters, but I kind of want this to just be more in general about how fucked up this family is, because they're all fucked up.
Yeah.
Specifically, like, how the kids got screwed over really bad by the parents. So I think I want to have it be that they, for whatever reason, they're going, you know, Abby and Harper are going. I was going to say Mackenzie, that's the actor.
Are going
to their family, her family's home for Christmas. I don't know why, maybe because of the mail race again. But knowingly, and I think maybe the plan is like, listen, we know I haven't, you know, I'm telling you now that I have not come out to my family for complicated reasons, but we'll go down and we'll give it some time to get comfortable and then we'll tell them. Like on Christmas or something, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They're sort of going, and maybe there's sort of a binding or a semi-binding promise that Harper makes of like, yeah, I will do it. We'll do it. Like, I promise that if I take you with me.
On this day, this will be done.
Yeah, I will do it by this day. I just need like the time and the courage to build up. And so they do that. And you can still have all of that beginning awkwardness where, like, they have to pretend to be roommates or friends. Mm-hmm. Like, I kind of want Sloane to get there earlier. Again, Sloane is pretty brutal in the end of the movie, and I do like that. So I kind of want to have her there earlier and just kind of establish, like, maybe more of a clear history. Especially because, like, Sloane's the oldest. And at some point was, like, presumably, you would imagine when she was on track to be a lawyer, like, would have been the favorite.
Right.
And I just kind of wonder, like, what happened? Flipped.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, why did she go from that to making gift baskets?
That part's underexplained, right?
Yeah,
no,
like...
it really isn't explained.
They imply that maybe... it became clear to her somehow that Victor Garber and Mary Steenburgen were, like, really enchanted with them having a family.
Right, I mean, like, that's one... The reason they say that they stopped being lawyers is to, like, raise their kids. So I assume the implication is that they, like, Victor Garber was just so subtly being, like, family, 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 that they're like, okay, I guess maybe if we focus all of our energy on having kids...
Yeah, but, like... when Tipper says, like, and then they had kids...
Yeah, she seems to resent it.
She seems to resent it, so it's like...
Yeah.
They miscalculated,
right.
Or they didn't know. I don't know, because we don't know. But my instinct is that that was some sort of flip.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think if you won all these awards and you were on track to be a really good lawyer, then you probably were daddy's favorite girl.
Right.
For a while.
Right.
As the eldest, you had a lot of responsibility on you. That's kind of like typically the thing, right? To like succeed or whatever. And maybe part of the reason why Harper gets a lot of cred is because, again, obviously Jane is like, you know, neglected because she had some, you know, weird issues during childhood they didn't want to deal with.
She wouldn't stop biting.
She wouldn't stop biting or whatever. Yeah. And maybe Harper had that like sort of like baby child thing combined with like also being pretty academically gifted or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I just have to mention that by virtue of the fact that she's younger, would have had to have been later picked as the favorite kid. That it would have had to start with Sloane.
Right.
Yeah.
So that I'm kind of interested in delving into that in the story, especially because I feel like the worst thing that happens in this movie is that Sloane comes out. Ruins the coming out,
yep.
Right? Like, that's pretty bad.
Yeah.
And I think that I would keep that moment, and I think I would even keep Mackenzie denying it, because I feel like you could make it about the fact that Harper was, like, robbed of that ability to...
Right, to have her own...
have that moment for herself. Because, like, especially if you kind of establish in the movie that she's building up to this moment and is kind of losing the ability in that moment to, like, have it for herself, and now it's kind of ruined forever because you can't really put the genie back in the bottle once someone else does it. Yeah, I think I kind of want to focus on those two, really amp up that moment with Jane where it's, like, Jane is ignored for a lot of the movie. Like, there's just not a lot going on with Jane. Yeah, I think Abby is kind of just more of an audience surrogate, and that maybe Harper's more of the main focus along with the other daughters in the family. And just kind of talk about how fucked up your fucking kids can get if you just don't...
If you're just fucking psychotic.
Yeah, if you're psychotic and weird and, like, aren't just, like, looking after,
right.
Like...
You love know, is transactional and...
Yeah, your love is transactional, and what are you teaching your kids to, like, value and emulate in the world?
Okay, so you actually touched on some of the themes I was also ruminating on.
Well, too bad. Now you have to change them.
I love this idea, because this is something I think about every single Christmas whenever I have gone home, especially being in, like, the house I grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
You feel that pull.
Right.
Of, like, regression, almost.
You're sleeping in your childhood bedroom.
Yes, and you're also noticing that the way that you are remembered and perceived by not just parents, but by, like, relatives and everything, is you just realize, oh my God, you have this Christmas crystallized idea of me from like 10, 15, perhaps even 20 years ago. I really wanted to play with that a lot more. And I think there's a way to do that without a lot of the like bummer shit that I didn't like about this movie. Our main character is probably more Harper. We can get into her complexity without necessarily having to make her seem so crazy and ridiculous and just like out of pocket. So my thought is, she is estranged from her family. She's been with Kristen Stewart, Abby, for, I'm going to say, at least 3 years. I'm also throwing out the proposal thing. We don't need it. I understand that that was maybe meant to be a measure of like how emotionally invested they were, but I don't think they did much with it. I don't think we need it. Abby is aware that Harper has not come out to her parents. So by this point, they will have already celebrated Christmas on their own as a couple in like their own like community in town for at least 2 years.
In Lawrenceville.
Is that where they were at? Okay. Yeah. I appreciate the local perspective.
Good neighborhood.
The one member of her family that Harper has stayed close with, Jane, who is also someone who felt sort of bowled over or like run over by her family. Mm-hmm. In my mind, and Jane and Harper have always been very close, and if maybe not outwardly to the knowledge of the rest of the family, but had like leaned on each other privately.
Yeah.
Jane is the one person in the family that knows that Harper is a lesbian and perhaps has even met, like gone out to visit and meet Abby. One of the parents, let's say it's Richter Garber, has some sort of health event.
Like a carnival?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And that Jane suggests that it might be a good idea to at least come back for this Christmas. I don't want to necessarily make it too much about that situation. That was just where my mind went as a way to try to contrive them coming back.
It could just be like a scare.
Yes. A scare.
Or that's, he's in the rest home at the Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
With all the insane people.
Because that movie's already come out by this point, and it's a nice callback.
Yeah, so you see Richard Garber being wheeled out of there a la Hannibal Lecter.
Straight jacket and mask.
Yes.
But my other thought is that Harper has kind of talked herself into this idea of, like, I'm going to finally do it. I'm going to come out to my family. And then what I want this to be is her being forced to reappraise her family, because now she's having to think about it coming through Abby's eyes and what this must look like to her. And I think I want her to realize afresh how overbearing, how unaccepting, how rigid, how just unloving her family has been and how toxic their dynamic is. And where I want the conclusion to be is, maybe this is another Chris Me Too dark of a movie for Christmas, but my thought is, I think it's a liberating thought to realize that there are people...
You can kill your parents.
No, not kill, but just like, to realize once and for all, I don't even need to come out to them because I don't need this in my life.
Right.
I have Abby... We have our thing. I have Jane. She's the one member of my family who I'm still keeping this relationship with. I think there's an attempt, multiple attempts throughout the movie for her to come out, but that legitimately it somehow gets shot down, reverted. I was even thinking, like, she does manage to say it to Mary Steenburgen, but she's so spun up that it just sort of, like, bounces off of her. I just think it's an interesting realization. It doesn't matter that Harper's family, whether or not they accept her, because they suck, and there's no reason to keep them around.
Yeah.
So in this context, I feel like Riley, who also in this version, I think, yes, there was probably a bad falling out when they were younger, but definitely in my version of this, Harper has made amends, because I find it impossible to believe that she did not look back on this choice with immense regret. So I think, like, Riley in this case is sort of the other, like, cool person back home that they can kind of reconnect with. I think that message is just about realizing, like, I have these weird attachments to and this need for approval for this group of people that I'm now realizing are not worth my time and attention anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then Harper goes to see her dad and she says, I know what I have to do, but I don't know if that is...
And then she's like, so I won't. And then Abby comes in with a pillow and just...
Yeah. This would be a pretty great if it ended with, like, Kristen Stewart, like, throwing a lit match behind her. It's the entire house is so on fire.
After she was, like, sprinkling gasoline everywhere.
That would be a glorious ending.
So, I love all of our different fixes. The last thing we have to do is, would you recommend it?
I don't know.
Honestly, I would. Because I did, honestly.
Yeah.
But I also, I find this movie, like I said, do I think it's very funny? No. It honestly makes me feel very complicated feelings, but I actually think it's a really interesting thing to talk about. And I also just, I think there are things about this movie that I really like, and yeah, I would recommend it.
I don't know. I think if you're queer, I think there are better options for you.
Yep.
I think this is a good movie to hand to your straight people in your life to teach them.
About coming out.
About coming out and some stuff about queer.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it's that useful for queer people. I think if you want representation, there's other sources available for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's particular. It didn't light a world on fire, this movie. I didn't get anything out of it. So I think, again, I think the best thing it does is sort of tell this story about coming out, even if it's got some major problems that we've all pointed out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's stuff I like. It's kind of funny. But the problem for me really is just that, like, the central core of this movie is so kind of miscalculated mm-hmm. and rotten that it almost, like, it's a question of, like, can you still enjoy a movie if, like, the center of it just simply does not work? And my answer is, I don't know what to tell you. I'm not sure if you can or can't.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the center truly cannot hold in this case.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Yeah. I really don't know.
Is this the first time, like, is this the most flummoxed you have felt?
I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of times where I'm sort of apathetic toward a movie. This is perhaps the most I'm split, so could be.
Well, this year for Christmas, we gave each other emotional complication.
Yeah. What else is new?
Well, as always, I always have such a great time talking about Christmas movies with you guys.
I love Christmas.
I also love recess. That was happiest season.
That was happiest season. No, though, it's cleaner.
Right. Are we sure about that?
Yeah.
You can find us on trappack.com/ywatch.
Just trappack.com. Just go to trappack.com. That's it.
Just go to trappack.com.
That's it. Literally it. That's all you need to worry about. There's no slashes, no nothing. Just go there.
Give us 5 stars.
Review us on all of the podcasting services. You can subscribe to us there, like us there, follow us there, whatever it is that you have to do.
Shall we buy it out?
Bye! Happy holidays!
Happy holidays!
Happy season!